That, I'm going to hand the meeting over to Andrew, our second speaker.
Thanks, Jake. My name's Andrew, I'm an addict.
Hey, Andrew.
I went out on a break and I ran off to get some Coke, Diet Coke, and I thought I need to wake myself up, and I was coming back and I seen Jim, and Jim said, "How are you?" And I went, "I feel really weird." He said, "Nothing new there then." So I'm sort of sitting there feeling really weird, and I've done this a few times, and if I was to tell you the truth right here, right now, I feel like I really am struggling just to talk. But I know I'll get into it, and then you won't stop me. You know, Gary asked me about 11 months ago. He said, "I want you in the hot seat soon." And I said, look, don't give me no advance warning. Just drop it on me. So for the last 11 months, I've been coming to the meeting thinking, and Gary's going to drop it on me tonight. I'm going to do the chair, so. And then I knew his commitment was running out, and I thought, he's forgot about me. And he asked me 2 weeks ago. So here I am. I've been working with this lad today, right? And couldn't understand a word I was saying. And I knew he couldn't understand a word I was saying, but he kept nodding, so I kept talking, and and we got a lot done. So it was a bit like this program, probably. So a lot of people come into this and do this chair, and they say, "Can you hear me up the back?" And I'm going to say, "Can you understand me up the back?" I suppose, right, when I do chairs, especially when there's a big audience of people, it's kind of nice because I know I've got something that none of you can relate to, and that's being Welsh. And, I sort of, it's quite nice sometimes. Sometimes it's quite difficult as well. But I'll give you a little insight to my upbringing, right? Most of you know I was born in a town called Merthyr Tydfil. If you haven't heard of it or been there, go there and you'll realise how good you got it, you know? And as I was growing up, it was like, if you didn't speak like me, right, or you had any type of accent, you were probably lost. You had probably taken a wrong turn in and found yourself in Merthyr Tydfil wondering, what the shit am I doing here? You know, in my early years, there was one black guy in Merthyr Tydfil. And when I started smoking dope and listening to reggae, I thought Roger, the black guy, was the guy to hang out with. Turns out Roger was completely straight. There was one gay guy. Talk about the only gay in the village. This is the truth. We had only one gay guy in the village, right? His name was Gareth Lyons. We used to call him the King of the Beasts. And he wasn't straight. He had his fingers in everything. And so there wasn't much cultural diversity where I come from. It was kind of single track minded. You know, it was very sort of the same all around the town. And I went to school because I had to. That's the reason why I went to school. I hated it. I thought there was nothing there for me. And then I realised that I could not go to school as well if I wanted to, you know. And the only consequence of that was my parents would get it. And that was kind of all right with me. You know, if I weren't getting the thing, they were getting it. I kind of done it. So I sort of started hanging around on the mountainsides, building dens. There was a foam factory where I used to live. We used to build dens out of foam just to coincide with my new hobby, glue sniffing. And that's kind of how I sort of kind of grew up. And I left school. I was thrown out of school, actually. And I got into construction. I became a bricklayer. And And that's the way it was, you know. So the drugs were kind of there from an early age. And I think as well, for glue sniffing as well. Once I'd taken that drug, right, and the way it warped my mind and twisted my mind and let me see and perceive the way the world was in an hallucination, all the other drugs I was taking after that were quite easy to handle. So, you know, I was just going into this path of, okay, let's try the next one. You know, I didn't come from poverty, but there wasn't much wealth in the town. So even if he was a good thief, there was nobody to sell the shit to. Well, there was one or two, but they had a lot of people selling them stuff. So you had to have some really good stuff, actually. And, you know, I went to work most days, and also I couldn't go into a shop and steal. So what I did, I nicked roofs, literally, took them off the houses. I took pedestrian highways up, no kidding, the old pavement, right along the street. What we do, we take council-headed paper, we turn up in a van, we put posts up, we put bunting up. Even the people who come out with thinking that we are workmen, you know, making us tea, coffee. You know what I mean? We'd be drinking it. End of the day, all the flagstones are gone and we're off. You know what I mean? We done it to a church once. We took, and it was military position as well. You know, there's about 9 of us on it. You know, there's about 12,000 slates on this roof, right? And were you getting £1.50 a slate added up? There's a lot of money involved. But it's right by the side. Right, the school's the old street on one side. On the other side is the residential houses. There is a railway track, right? So we had to have people looking out on the railway track, making sure nobody could see us on the trains reporting us. We had to do the leafleting again on the residential side, saying we're doing work commencing on the roof today. And what we done, we took the old one side of the roof off, of the school, you know. And we done it with such military position as well. We put mattresses on the ground and we just dropped the slates from the top of the roof, and then there'd be people on the bottom just loading them on vans. Then we'd go up to the top of the mountain where the guy would be waiting with another van to take them off us and pay us in cash. But we didn't realise when we done this one, we took the one side off the roof, right? And that night, there was really high winds and it blew the other side right off. And it landed on the side of the residential houses, right? All over their cars, everything. And it was like, there was a lot of us, we were really getting chased for that kind of shit as well. But it didn't prevent us. And that was kind of when it was fun. I wasn't really addicted to anything then. That was just like, that was just about earning a pound note. No, that was just about being greedy. And I think, you know, that's the way it was. You know, it was just like, I wanted to wear clothes, I wanted things. You know, like I said, there wasn't much money around the town, so how am I going to get it? You know, well, if there's nobody to rob off, then I'll just take what the bloody place is made of. You know, I'll just take that. And that's kind of what I've done. I did get it wrong once, though. I took my mate's roof off, and he ended up knocking his house down. And they put a compulsory... That's really an awkward one as well. You try making an amends to a guy who's lost his house because his roof's been taken off. He was working in another country for 3 months. He comes back, and his house is gone. And my friend, we ended up borrowing money off him as well in the 80s to buy a load of ecstasy, if we did. We ended up buying a load of coke and taking it all. But we had to... My mate, who introduced me to NA, sort of turned around and said, look, it's not sitting right, I've got to go and pay this guy. And I'm like, oh, do you have to? He said, yeah, I think you should come with me as well. He said, because you spent half the money. He said, I'll pay you, but you just come along with me. So I said, yeah, okay, then let's go and do it. And we ended up doing it underneath a Tommy Cooper statue in Caerphilly, giving him his money back. And the guy couldn't believe it, actually. You know what I mean? And there's something really funny, and this is not a joke or anything. The guy's walking up, and my mate's getting really nervous. And we're standing right by the side of this Tommy Cooper statue, and he goes, shit, how am I going to do this? And I went, just like that. And that sort of lightened it, you know what I mean? So we were right, all right then. And then it was just like, then I got introduced to London. That guy was living in London as well, and I come up here, and I founded the drugs that I was always looking for. You know, the classes that I thought would make me something that I don't know if I wanted to be, but it would make me something. It would give me something. You know, the heroin, the cocaine, that was messaged through media, such a bad thing. I glamorized it and made it such a good thing. You know, it kind of worked in my head. Do you know what I mean? Because I wasn't falling for what the media was saying. You know, I was falling for what my mind was saying. My mind was saying, get on it. You know, and so when I come to London, you know, my first dabble with heroin was a swap. We swapped a big bag of dried mushrooms that, you know, I pinched off a guy in Wales, and we come up here and we swapped it for just a load of resin and some heroin. And we were really lucky as well because we didn't know how to cook it up. And what we'd done, because a drug that done a lot of damage to me was amphetamine. You know, I was fixing from a really early age. And the powder in Merthyr Tydfil was crap. You know, the guy used to sell it, we should call him the candy floss man. It was so good. It was just, it was terrible. But, you know, what we done with this first little bit of heroin we had, we just cooked it up. Put half a gram in it and thought we could take it. But what we didn't do, we didn't break it down. So we were really lucky. And then we learned how to do that. So we were really lucky. And I just sort of knew that, you know, this town's a little bit too small. It's a little bit too, you know me, I know you. I don't want to know you. You don't want to know me. I'm off. And I come up here, and I kind of had a good time for a while. But, you know, someone coming from the sticks, a small environment. I come up here, it was a big environment. And it kind of spooked me out, and I had to go running back. And there was still something sort of ticking in the back of my head that, you know, what I'm doing now is going to expose me in a way that probably I don't want to get exposed in this town. And it did as well. You know, when eventually, you know, the drugs of my choice arrived in the town, I was kind of the first one to fall for it. You know, I'd already been on it. But the first one, like Carla, I was the first one to sort of... No, they were... That's a lie, you know. There were people on it. They were like... There were some old hippies who never shared the shit. Do you know what I mean? You know, they were stuck in there, plotted up in their little cabins on the mountainside, taking the gear. But, you know, you were getting none of it. So when it came in the way it did, I was on it. I kind of fell for it as well. So then I kind of stood out in the town... As an heroin addict, as a dirty scumbag junkie, and I kind of was asked to leave, you know, off people who you kind of listen to, and that's what I done. And then I come up here, and it's like, it was kind of strange. I ended up on the streets, and you know, it was like. It was like the end of the road, I suppose. But being at the end of the road, you kind of accept it as well. You kind of know you've arrived, and you're not going anywhere. So I'll just sit here for a while, for however long it takes. Because I'm not getting out of this shit. Because nobody's going to lead me out of it, because I didn't even know anyone who can lead me out of it. You know, there's people coming on to me and turning around and saying to me, coming in here, coming in, be warm, coming in, clean up. You know what I mean? Coming in, eat this. Just like, no man, I can do that, yeah. You know, nobody turned around and said, there's another way, you know, there's a way out, yeah. Nobody ever said that. You know, and I kind of accepted it for the way it was. You know, I stayed on the street in Notting Hill, right, for a long time. I lived in Pembridge Gardens. Anyone knows Pembridge Gardens in Notting Hill? Them houses are about £12 million each, right? I was there for about 18 months. I wasn't in the house, I was in the bin chute underneath it. You know what I mean? Still in the postcode, though, you know? And I stayed there. I shared a bin chute with a Scottish guy for 18 months. Nothing against Scottish guys, right? But, you know, this guy drove me absolutely nuts, you know? Because he was an alcoholic, and I thought he had it sussed. I thought just being an alcoholic, right, was the way forward. Because all that guy had to do in the morning is get up and get drunk. You know, I get up and get drunk, I start clucking. I gotta get my shit together. He doesn't want to get my shit together for me. So he's leaving it down to me. You know, and that's all he's got to find is £1.30. And I got to find a tenner. And that shit's going right on in my head. You know what I mean? And it's like, but that's the way it was. You know, I got a story. I haven't said this one for a while, but I'm going to kind of share it, you know. I was sitting there one day, right, and this guy goes past me. I see him going past a few times and staring. Stopped once and had a chat with me and, you know, kind of concerned. I didn't want concerned people around me. I wanted sort of generous people around me. you being concerned is not going to get me what I need. You being generous will get me what I need. If you're not being generous, then do one, yeah. And he turned around and he said, look, I walk past you every day. You're in the same place, no matter what the weather, you know, and, you know, you're Welsh, you know. What are you doing and when you go home? And I said, I can't afford to go home. I thought, you're going to go a touch there. Can't afford to go home. So he turned around and he said, if I buy you a ticket, will you go home? And I went, yes. So he said, come with me and I'll take you down to Paddington. I thought, oh, this is a bit much. You know what I mean? He's not going to just give me the money. I thought, that would have been too easy. But then I thought, yeah, I'll go down to Paddington with him and, you know, surely you just take the money out of the cash machine. But he did, but he bought the ticket, right? And then I turned around and said to him, listen, mate, I said, you're going to put me on a train behind the wheels, right? You're going to give me a ticket, right? I'm going to get on. I got nothing. I said, I can't eat. I got no drink. And then I said, and then I stop in Cardiff. I live in the valleys. They are way further than Cardiff. I got to get up to there. How am I going to do that? He said, I've thought about that. I'm going to give you 20 quid. So he did. And then the train was ready to pull off. So I get on the train. And he stands there on the platform. So I'm looking at him, looking at me. Thinking, I ain't getting off because I need this 20 quid badly. Right? And he stays there. And the next thing, whoosh, the door shut, right? So I thought, okay then, 20 quid, I'll go to Reading, I'll get on the next train back, and I'll have 20 quid, a one and one. He's waving. Thinking he's done his good deed for the day. Which he had, you know. And the announcement comes over the tunnel. This is the fast train to Cardiff. Swift down. This is the fast train to Cardiff. And I'm like, the fast train to Cardiff? So the conductor comes back and says, yeah, we don't stop, we go straight to Cardiff. And I'm like, oh no. So I'm on the train all the way to Cardiff. And I get to Cardiff, I got 20 quid and nowhere to score. So I got to get to Merthyr Tydfil. You know, my mother's still alive. I get up there, I manage to score. And she gives me some money to get back as well. Because she knew, as soon as she sees me, she knew I was in trouble. You know, and I was embarrassed as well. She gave me money and I got back. And I got back to Notting Hill and I thought, do you know what? Never again. But if someone had come along the next day and given me 20 quid and told me to do the same thing again, I would have done it. I would have probably walked it, actually. And that's just the way it was, you know? And then... Eventually, you guys turned up. And that was kind of... You turned up through my friend who was... who had to get clean, so he said, right? I found it a liberty to tell the truth. That he was going to leave me out. No, I'm being serious, yet, right? We've gone through thick and thin together. And all of a sudden, he's got a flat as well. I'm being made homeless so he can get clean. Kind of understood it, but I kind of had a resentment as well. I went, all right, then I'll let you do it. You know, and he did as well. He got a year clean. And then I meet up with him. He's got this annoying grin on his face. He's got a year clean. And he takes me to a meeting for 20 quid. You know, that's the reason why I went to the meeting, for 20 quid. And then you guys just became another group of people I needed to avoid. you know, because I found you really annoying. Because you always seem to have problems, and you always seem to have this really sort of really bad struggle of life you've been through, and you couldn't see me and my shit. And this is what I was experiencing on the street, and I thought, you know what, I can't be bothered to listen to you lot anymore. You know what I mean? I used to nod off on the street, and I used to wake up, right, and there used to be weird defines in front of me. And no money. And I used to bin them. You know what I mean? Because it's just that's the way it was, you know. I was just a lost soul, really. You know, a lost soul that had detached from everything as well. Not just, you know, my friend, who I'd gone through a lot with, I detached from my family in Wales. There was no phone calls anymore. I didn't know how my daughter was doing. I didn't even know how my daughter was at one time. I come into recovery, I thought my daughter was 10. I found out she was 11. My mother had to tell me, she said, Andrew, she's 11. So I was kind of detached from it all, you know. I knew people were concerned about me as well. But that couldn't stop me. That couldn't get me to a place where I turn around and say, do you know what? I know you're all worried about me. I'm going to give it a shot. I couldn't find it in myself to sort of get to that place where, do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to walk into a detox. That was beyond me. For one reason, the fear of doing a withdrawal was too much anyway. It was too much for me. You know, and the person who gave the attraction to me was Lucky Diamond. You know, and for anyone who doesn't know him, he's the most tattooed man in the world. And he passed it on to me one day when I was open-minded. It was only a little window, but I seen it. He just had something I wanted. Didn't want the tattoos, but he had something. You know, and then I got arrested, and then I ended up in Wandsworth, you know, and you know, Wandsworth will bring you down even if you're not on drugs, you know. And I'm in there, and it's kind of, there's a violent attack on one wing, right? And then there's a fire on the wing. They put the old prison goes on a lockdown. And I'm on a wing where it stays on lockdown for 2 days. And in that 2 days, I didn't get no drugs. I didn't get nothing. So I have two days of complete abstinence from everything. And that was it. Was that a coincidence? Maybe. But that's where it started for me. And that's where I found H&I as well. You know, that's where they carried the message then. And that's the people then who turned around and said to me, there is another way. And also gave me the security of being in a prison where I felt really sort of detached again. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I certainly didn't feel comfortable in that environment. They kind of gave me a little bit of a fellowship where I sort of, I become part of something. You know, and then I'm in recovery. If that's what we call it, you know. For me, what happened to me was, right? And this is just me, right? The getting and finding ways and means to get more, right? In my using was really, really difficult. But not as difficult as it's been in my recovery. You know, it was a single focus. I needed to get myself from not clucking, right? I needed to get myself from not withdrawing from alcohol. And that was it. You know, what I had to do to get that, you know, that was kind of confusing. But that was it. I come into recovery, and then the getting and finding ways means to get more is everything. It's not just the focus of one thing. Now I want it all. And the longer I stay in recovery, the more I want. You know, and I've entered into things that have been really confusing and really heartbreaking as well. You know, I've come into recovery and I thought, I've done some good things. I'll get to them, right? But I've come into recovery and I've thought, all right then, I need money. How am I going to get the money? I need a relationship. I got relationships and do you know what? I've come into NA, right? And I should come in here for recovery. And I've walked out with jobs and girlfriends, right? And they all lead me back to NA. Kind of with my head between my fucking legs. You know, I thought, I've been on dating sites as well, thinking maybe that's the way to find a relationship. Get someone out of recovery. So I'm on this one app. I'm going to tell you my experience with dating sites. I'm on this one app, right? And there's a picture of all the girls. And it goes, yes, no, maybe. A little bit like step 8, yeah? So I'm going through it. Yes, yes, yeah. I find it really hard to say no, by the way. Yes, 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 right? And all of a sudden, bang, there's a girl in recovery I know. So I just burst out laughing. And I thought, yeah, and I carried on. I thought, shit, if I can see her, she can see me. Do you know what I mean? And then I carry on going, I find there's another one in recovery. And I thought, I've got to have a little bit of more of a look. And I carry on going, and I see, oh, I don't know if I should say this. Shit, fuck it. I see someone who I know was not a girl, but is on the girl, do you get me? I thought, man, I need to get off this stuff now. So that was my experience with online dating. But really quickly, right? That getting and finding ways and means to get more. What happened to me, I'll tear through it now, right? What happened to me? I come into recovery, right? My health deteriorates really quickly. I'm in a place where I'm hospitalised. I've got to go on interferon. It's not looking good. I'm not feeling good. I look at you lot. You lot look good. I think I'm in the wrong environment. My head starts playing games to me, but I can't because I'm sort of losing this kind of... I'm self-loathing. I come in, I got psoriasis over my face, right? I see you lot, I think you've got the perfect lives with your girlfriends, doing your step work, down the gym, and I'm like losing it. You know, so I try to do the things that will give me some kind of quality of life back. So I do the interferon. The interferon, I go on it, oh God, it was hard. And what was harder again? It didn't work. I thought I got dealt a really bad hand. I thought, God, if you are out there, that was really shit of you. Is that 10?
10 minutes.
That was a really bad hand, you know? I was crying outside St. Mary's, and I thought, what's the worth of it? Then I end up on a liver transplant list, right? And the doctors turn around and sort of come around me and turn around and say, look, we'll sort it out, we'll take care of it. You're on the right, you're doing the right thing. You're not drinking, you're not doing this, and you're doing the right thing. You keep on doing what you need to do. And we'll sort it up to this end. And they did. They put me on the transplant list. I went down to Cambridge. I was on it for like 7 months. And then they turned around and they went, we've got good news for you, Andrew. You're out of danger. This is without having the transplant. They said, you're out of danger, right? What I heard was, we're going to leave you by the wayside. I didn't hear that you're out of danger. I thought, they'd take me off a transplant. What are you doing that for? You know what I mean? I've built up my whole mindset now into having a new liver and a great life. And now you're saying you're not going to give it to me. I thought, no, I don't mind. It's a bum deal. And he turned around and he said, listen, it'll be more dangerous to give you a new liver than not to. You know, the interferon has stopped the attacking of the virus on a great scale. You know, you're repairing. And over the time, my health has come back. So that one thing that I wanted most of all, right, was the quality of life I now have. So going back to the getting, using and finding ways to get more, that I think I should have everything, I realise that I've got it. But the head still play games. Steve Jobs, right? Billionaire. Oh, I don't know how many times over. Dies of liver cancer. He had a liver transplant. I think to myself sometimes, right? What would Steve Jobs have given to walk in with them consultants I walked into and they turned around and said to him, you're out of danger, Steve. Would he have given all his wealth away? Maybe. But he's not here to tell the tale. And I kind of am. You know, so really, I've had a result. I've had a big result. You know, but I've got to do it on a daily basis. I've got to realize that, shit, man, this might come freely, but sometimes it can come in a way that I don't understand and I find it tricky. You know, I always kind of finish on the one thing that I find the most blessing and the best thing that's happened to me in my recovery is my daughter, right? And it was 11 years of no contact. I get clean and I turn around and I send my partner, I do a step eight, I send her a letter, and she turned around and went, no way, no way. When she's ready, if she wants to, she'll come and find you. And I was in the hospital once, around the interferon, just after the interferon, because I was having internal bleeds. And I kind of got the text saying, thanks for my birthday present, and I love you. And that started the ball rolling. So within a year then, I'd arranged to meet up with her. And after 11 years, I left her in the garden in Merthyr Tydfil, playing outside. She didn't know what was going on. I was getting pushed out the door by my partner, who wanted nothing more to do with me. It was totally understandable. She was playing. I give her an hug and I walked away. And 11 years later, I walked back down and there's a girl walking through that garden, walking towards me, who was now 16 years old. And it completely blew me away, to tell you the truth. And I don't know why I'm getting emotional now, because I've shared this before. But it completely blew me away. And what part blew me away was the part where she just come up to me and hugged me and said, I love you. And I thought, yeah, that's forgiveness. On a scale that I will probably never get to. You know. And that relationship has just been getting stronger and stronger and stronger, you know. She sent me a text yesterday, turning around and saying, Dad, can you send me some money? I just dyed my hair, it's all gone wrong, I'm ginger. So, you know. No, I'm done, mate.
Cool.
I'm done. Thanks, I'll leave that. Yeah.